Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
We have some exciting news, guys. It is official. This show is now available on Spotify, and it's free. I want to make this super easy for you and your friends to listen to this podcast and enjoy me even more. Spotify has taken us even further and provides us with even more listeners. If you are already listening to music on Spotify, now you can listen to the podcast in the same place. If you're not yet on Spotify, all you have to do is download the app for free. That's right, no credit card necessary, and simply search for the show and start listening today.
Uncle Jill, Uncle Jill, there's no bad guy like Uncle Jill. Never lost, not even a round. Undefeated, undisputed. Oh yeah, here comes the bad guy. Uncle Jill, Uncle Jill, there's no bad guy like Uncle Jill.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. So the Super Bowl is done. Look, the Super Bowl is very interesting to me, and football is just very interesting to me. And a number of wrestlers have gone and done very well in football. Stephen Neal comes to mind, who's a world champion in wrestling, hadn't played football since like junior high, maybe played some high school ball, walks right into the New England Patriots, warms the bench for a season, then starts for three seasons, makes three Pro Bowl teams, and wins three Super Bowls. But he had a physicality. There was just something where he was physical, and football's a contact sport, and some of these wrestlers have a leg up, and many people think it's because of the physical aspect. I think that that is part of it. I personally believe it's because of the mental ability to focus. And you saw this within the Super Bowl. You saw this moment. The 49ers go up by like 10 points. They then do a team celebration. Somebody flags the boys and they all 11 guys, they run over into the end zone and you got three or four guys laying down posing. You got all the guys in the back and they're posing. This was a very scripted and rehearsed moment that they wanted to have and they got it. The problem is there was 4 minutes and 21 seconds left in the game. They haven't done a goddamn thing yet. You've won a grand total of nothing. And I would maintain for you that one of the reasons that wrestlers have gone over and done so well in football is their ability to keep their focus. A wrestler would never celebrate with 4 minutes and 21 seconds left in a contest because there'd be nothing to celebrate. No athlete in the world, male or female, any sport, amateur, pro, any way you want to make this comparison, behaves like a football player. You will never see Michael Jordan. You will never see Muhammad Ali. You'll never see Dominic Mochiano. You'll never see the greats ever run onto a court, jumping up and down, shouting and whooping and doing chants and using their energy. You'll never see that. You will not see Kobe or LeBron come out of the tunnel using energy and anything that isn't the competition. Not only is it an energy suck, they're focused on the task that is at hand. And the culture of football is unique in and of itself, where there is no focus. And a football player could make an argument, go, chill, but let me tell you why. Let me just tell you why we do that. We only play 7 seconds at a time. We can regroup and we can go out and another team comes in and we just don't have to maintain and hold that focus. It's just not the same. I won't disagree with you there. I'm not even attempting to prove that this is a negative to the sport. All I am attempting to prove is that it is something unique to the sport. You will see no other athlete in any field, from Pee Wee, Little League, up to the Olympic Games, up to the pros, any sport that behaves like that. I will then offer you another example, which happened as recently as yesterday, where one team decided to celebrate when there was 4 minutes left in a contest. They lost their focus in a culture where they don't ever believe in focus. None of them. If the fans are good with it, the coaches are good with it, the athletes themselves want to do it, you have to put rules in some of the lower levels of football about over-celebrating, about when you can spike, about the way that you can jeer and do some of these things. You have to put them in. Players want to come in. They want to do that. I understand. I'm not telling you to stop. I'm sharing with you, if I was the coach and I was running it, our athletes are going to act like every other athlete, which is calm, until somebody says go, which is calm, reserving your energy until it's time to use it, and you're going to keep your focus. We are not going to go to do a choreographed team pose in an end zone on worldwide TV when there's 4 minutes left in the game. So Dana's come out and said that he would be open to booking Adesanya versus Jones under the right circumstance. Now, that fight is a huge fight. That fight is a huge fight a year from now. That fight is a huge fight 18 months from now. I mean, this is a fight that's going to be just like a fine wine, and it's only going to get better with time. There are some gambles in there. Is John still going to be relevant? Is Adesanya still going to be relevant? Are these guys still going to want to fight each other? There's something there. You could play your hand now where you could wait a little bit. When you're dealing with Dana, he's not a checkers player. He's always playing chess. So my guess is he's going to put a little rope in between this. Not to mention there's some very good options for Adesanya right now. The Yoel Romero fight right around the corner. Paulo Costa's coming back, who earned a number one contendership, who's, by the way, undefeated. Very good options. Jones has a few less options, but that can change very quickly. I don't think this Jones going up to heavyweight thing, I don't know that that's going to catch on. And I think that in many ways, Jones is being pressured and bullied to go up to heavyweight. I don't think that the people that are encouraging John to go to heavyweight have his best interests in mind. I don't think it's about, yeah, just go up, show everybody how great you are. Go win another championship. Pat on the back and a great job. I don't think it's that. I think that it's coming from more of a place of, look, you've proved there's no light heavyweight that can deal with you. Let's go up to heavyweight and just hope somebody can catch you and put you down because I want to see you lose. I feel that that's happening. I don't think that's right to happen to John. I don't think that he deserves to be bullied considering he has taken on all comers and he's done it for a number of years. And by the way, he's kind of the perfect light heavyweight. Weighs right around that 220, a little north of that, a little south of that before he even starts camp. I mean, he's at the right weight class. Got lucky. So let's take a look, though, at what Dana said just for fun, because he said under the right circumstances. I would be curious what those circumstances are. Does it need to be a champ-champ match? Does Adesanya have to leave one behind and go up? Are they going to do a catch weight and it's a non-title for either one of them, which is also an option, by the way. It's never an option that's been explored in MMA, but that option has been explored in boxing and in professional wrestling. And yes, I know I just lost all my credibility and now you guys hate me because I said professional wrestling. But if we're talking about the world of promotion, that is something that's done. The champion will go out in pro wrestling matches, but it'll be a non-title match. Now that's going to piss everybody off. What is the point? Why am I watching this match? And why is he wearing a belt on the way to the ring if the belt is not up for grabs? Ric Flair did this before. Ric Flair got pinned 1-2-3, but it was a non-title match. That's great. That's great. Everybody's so upset. Now everybody wants to see the rematch, but Flair's got to put the title on the line. Flair will do the rematch, but he refuses to put the title on the line. So now it's still a non-title match. I mean, I realize that now we're just being a little bit silly. I do just share for you that if these guys just had a beef and they just wanted to get this worked out. I mean, I can remember when Ricardo Almeida fought Matt Hughes and it had nothing to do with anything other than this is personal. Hughes had fought Henzo. Almeida said, put me in, coach. Dana made the fight. In many ways, Yoel Romero's participation against Adesanya is personal as well. Dana wasn't overly enthused to do that match. Adesanya called him up, man, I don't like this guy. Can't keep me away from guys that I want to beat up just because I have the belt. He's a top guy. I'm a top guy. He says he wants to fight me. Well, guess what? He's going to fight me. And Dana goes, okay. I like that. I respect. Fine. We're in the fight business. We don't all have to get along here. It's one of the rare industries where you do not have to get along with your coworker. Okay. And look at it from the other perspective. Look at it if Adesanya had guys he wanted to fight, but he doesn't get to fight them because he's the champion. He would then be being punished by his own success, which is a very real thing, where you do have to fight some of the top guys. But to make believe that Yoel Romero is not one of the top guys, yes, he is. He most certainly is. So that fight is going to happen. And the reason I bring that train of thought up for you is if this is an Adesanya and John Jones, and these guys just have to fight, And when Adesanya tells you, I don't care about the belt, he is telling you the truth. And that wasn't true for his whole life. He wanted the belt, but now he's got two of them. And he doesn't need to do champ. I'm just sharing his mindset for you. And since he's the one taking the risk, going up and taking on the bigger guy, I think that in many ways we default to his mindset. By the way, he's got a whole lot of guys that he could fight that he could do one hell of a good amount of business with. John's not in that same spot. In many ways, the power does shift towards Adesanya in that. So if Adesanya said, look, I'll come meet him and we'll do it at 200 pounds and there's no belts on the line, I'll go right back down to 185, be no log jam, no holding you up. John, what do you say? Meet me at 200 pounds? Non-title match? We do a grudge match? What do you say? I do not suggest or predict for any of you that those two are going to go and fight and that there's going to be a non-title match at some weird and goofy weight class. I'm just sharing with you because Dana had thrown out a kind of a loose term. He said, well, under the right circumstances, I'm very curious. What would those be? What would those be? We know he's had a little bit of problem in the past with guys doing the champ thing, somebody having luck. I think we're seeing that with Cejudo right now might just be our most recent example. And the guy that has the luck and leaves there with all the hard work goes, man, if I can have success here, why would I ever cut back down? That wasn't fun. I'm going to stay here. Okay, fine. You're staying here, but now what do I do over here? Okay, we'll figure the belt out. The belt goes to the winner. Okay, that's a way to solve the problem, and I think that does solve all of the problems, but you can still see you're creating a problem. So if we're trying to put it under the right circumstance, I am curious. What would those circumstances be?
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
If you purchase supplies for a small to mid-sized business, Zorro.com, Zorro.com, is the place that you need to use as a resource. At Zorro, you're going to find all the things that you need to run a business, no matter of what size, and really in any industry. Zorro offers tools, safety equipment, cleaning and maintenance supplies, office and shipping, automotive, industrial equipment, and more, including the specialty items you can't find anywhere else. Whether you're shopping for an office, a factory, contracting business, or a machine shop, you can get exactly what you need all in one place. And when you shop at Zorro, you're going to find brands you already know and trust, like 3M, Prestone, Milwaukee, Schneider, Electric, and Proto, all at competitive prices. Want fast, free shipping? It's yours when you spend $50 or more. And if you have a question, a return, or need help finding exactly the right item, count on Zorro's customer service team based right here in the U.S. Visit Zorro, Zorro.com/Chael, and sign up for Zmail to get 15% off your first order. Zorro.com. All you need to make your business go.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
So a thread on the underground came out, and it asked a question, is Jorge Masvidal a bully? Now, this question comes out with two things in mind. First off, the Leon Edwards, the three-piece in a soda, and second off, the confrontation that he had recently with Kamaru Usman. And quite possibly, there's even a third thing, which is the story of the club that old Chael shared. But I have to tell you, I mean, for a bully, he sure picks a fight with some awfully hard guys. Isn't that the rule in bullying? You don't pick on hard guys. So, no, I don't think that Masvidal would qualify as a bully, but it does make you wonder, how should Usman carry himself prior to this fight? Because this is a very big fight, and Usman's in a little bit of a tough spot. I don't like when Usman has to get in altercations outside of the ring. We saw a little something with Ben Askren backstage. There was the Colby Covington at the Palms in the buffet line, you guys will recall. And all of a sudden, he's face-to-face with Masvidal. But what is Usman supposed to do? Right? I come out and tell you, I don't like to see him in this spot because it's just out of character for him. He's a very regular, very good-hearted guy. He loves his daughter. He loves his mother. He loves his team. He's got his head down. He focuses. He doesn't go out at night. And he's the top in the line for his sport. He's even gone on to say, he told Joe Rogan this, I thought it was interesting, that post-fight career, what he would like to do with life is to be a marriage counselor. And he backed that up by saying, actually, just a counselor of any kind. I'm actually very good at looking at people's situations, removing myself from it, standing back, and giving them advice. I do it with my friends all the time. I think I could do it on a professional level. I thought that was very fascinating. And also, I think what a good heart. Wants to go in and help other people with their relationship. I mean, Usman's a good guy. Can we at least agree on that? Usman's a good guy, but Usman keeps getting put in tough spots. When he had the run-in with Askren, by example, people were trying to hold Usman down at that time. And yes, he's going to have a chip on his shoulder. He had done some heavy lifting. He won the toughest tournament in all of sports, known as the Ultimate Fighter. He's undefeated fighter, lost one fight, but it was so long ago, everybody forgot it even happened. So we were calling him undefeated. And Askren slides in out of nowhere, and Askren took all the shine. And Usman's going, no, not so fast. I mean, you could see where he would have a chip on his shoulder. I don't know fully what happened with he and Colby at the buffet at the Palms. There was no audio on that video, if you guys will recall. You couldn't quite hear anything. So if we don't have the detail, we kind of got to throw it out, right? So he gets a pass on that one, perhaps, but he gets a pass. And then when you're face-to-face with Masvidal, and you know that's your next opponent, you know he's the BMF, and you know he's not afraid to get down backstage, you now have a level of responsibility to protect yourself at all times. And I don't like these street altercations. I'm very squeamish on that. I'm a real prude. I like to see the trained, licensed athletes compete in a trained and licensed environment and absolutely nothing else. But if you are in Kamaru Usman's shoes and you know this guy, and you know this guy over here, the BMF, is a legit BMF, and here we are face to face. I got to watch this guy. And if he flinches, I got to take him serious. You just do. What's Usman going to do? Going to stand his ground. Hope somebody gets involved. Hope somebody pushes him apart. Keep your eyes on him at the whole, right? You're going to follow some of the basic rules. Be ready to put your chin down, put your hands up. I mean, there's things that Usman does have an ability to take into consideration, psychologically speaking, when you come face to face with the BMF. There's just stuff there. But okay, here becomes another question. Masvidal's the bad guy going into that fight. The problem with Masvidal being the bad guy, so you instantly assuming that you default to the good guy role, the problem with that is he's loved. Okay? There is nothing in business that is more monetizable than a cool heel, but they only come along once every decade. You're only going to get a Stone Cold Steve Austin one time, and 10 years later, somebody else, then all of a sudden they get their turn. So when you have Masvidal, who is a heel, for sure he's a bad guy that everybody loves. Now, is he a bad guy? I mean, good guy, bad guy in the world of sport just means, does the crowd boo him or does the crowd cheer him? Masvidal's a bad guy, but the crowd's going to cheer him. You're stuck. You're stuck in a very hard spot if you're Usman and if you're looking to invoke emotion. I don't know that Usman is looking to do any of those things. Usman's in the driver's seat. He's the champion. He's going to headline. He's going to participate. Usman's in a great spot, and he may say, to hell with all of you. I don't care if nobody shows up to this fight. I don't care if everybody shows up to this fight. I fought in front of small crowds. I've fought in front of sold-out arenas. I don't care. I'm just coming to compete. That might be his stance. But let's say it's not. Let's say Usman wants to play his part in this. What's his part? What should it be? Should it be to just be authentic and be real? Come in cool suits with cool sunglasses, say cool things, and go fight your ass off? Yeah. Yes. The answer is yes to that. Does he try to reveal Masvidal in some way? Does he try to call Masvidal a bully, thus making himself the victim? And what do we know about victims? We sympathize with them, which means we then in turn like them. That could be one way to go with it. But it's a very tough spot. You usually are either the good guy or the bad guy, which means your opponent is whichever one you're not. Masvidal grabbed up both chairs. He's a bad guy. Everybody loves him. So John Jones came out. John Jones said he feels that the storm is behind me. That was his statement. And you know, if a guy lies to you all the time, you have the right to not believe him. I think when we look at John Jones, and I think there is a question, is the storm behind him and what does that mean? And how much separation and space should an athlete be given from his personal life to his career? If he got one wrong, how many times does he have to get them right before he's forgiven for that one that he got wrong? I mean, look, let's look at John over a short period of time. We'll call it the comeback fight against Gustafsson, by example. He's went on a run and he's been very busy. But I think that that is relevant because when John came back for that fight, he said, I want to be very busy. And a lot of people thought, oh, this is too good to be true. You know, we haven't had any John Jones in 15 months. We've barely had John Jones in 3 years, and now he's going to be super busy. Well, guess what? John did exactly what he said he was going to do. I mean, just to offer you that as one example, I think if John says that the storm is behind me, and I think he has laid out some very good faith since his return, I think he's built up some credibility. My own opinion. I think he is in a spot to say that he feels that the storm is behind him. Now, let's look into the mindset of John Jones just a little bit. Because John's one of these guys that has to fight angry, at least a little bit, at least a little piece of him. That approach does come from angry. He'll take something that somebody said and he'll sometimes work it into something that is a little more. That's okay. Whatever John's approach is has been working. I like to see that he's keeping it consistent and keeping it the same. I think that that's smart. One thing that's happening, though, is he is saying that Dominic Reyes has disrespected him. I will just share as an observer on the outside, that's not what I saw. I think it does come back to, what is respect? What does that mean? I hear that term get thrown out a lot, but what specifically does it mean to you? And John has then an ability to personalize it. And here's why I'll tell you that I haven't found Dominic to be disrespectful. Dominic came into the division young and hungry and unbeaten and started to get his rub and started to get his rise and worked through the card, got onto television, worked his way up co-main event, works his way into main event status, works his way into title shot status. The whole time with a dream to compete with and defeat John Jones, which means Dominic is saying, you are where I want to be. I want to copy you. I want to be like you. Yeah, ultimately, I'm going to need to beat you. That's part of this, too. This is sport, but I just feel like that. I just feel like Dominic's complimenting him. I don't think there's anything disrespectful about looking at a guy having your own dreams and going, wow, I like what he did. I want to try to do that. I want to do my very best. I want to work really hard and stay focused and disciplined. I want to try to do that. Oh, and by the way, you're the scariest guy alive. And I'm willing to walk into the fire. I mean, I think there's a real honor in that. Now, John doesn't need to agree with me. John's got to go in and compete with him. And John likes to go in a little bit mad. He likes to find something and get a little worked up. And this is what puts him in the right headspace. And I think that that's what we're starting to see. I don't know that I buy the fact that John is actually offended. I think John would tell you he is today. I don't think a week from now, John would tell you that he was actually offended that Dominic ever overstepped. I've never heard Dominic use profanity towards John. I've never seen him dig into John's past. He's family, friends, teammate. He never did anything like that. But he is saying, I think I can beat you. I've seen your skills. I know what mine are. You had a good run. Now is my time. That seems pretty G-rated to me. In all fairness, that does seem pretty G-rated to me. And if I'm a viewer of this contest, yeah, I like Angry John. I do like Chip on the Shoulder John. And I do even like what John said a couple of times stylistically about this fight, where he talks about his wrestling and talks about some of his wrestling advantages. I like that because I do feel as though I'm starting to see John get lured into stand-up contests. And it turns out John can win there too. We've seen that. But we also know enough about the sport that if a guy isn't keeping a certain tool sharp, he no longer has that tool. We also see that. So I like to see that John is aware of his wrestling prowess, and I'm led to believe he's then working on it and keeping that sharp. Good for John. For Dominic, though, imagine Dominic wasn't saying these things. Dominic is a relatively unknown guy. He's only had 12 fights. He burst on the scene in the big stage 2 years ago? About 2 years ago? Less even? Gets thrown into a main event against a former world champion and Chris Weidman. Boom, opens everybody's eyes up. Great. But he is a little bit of an unknown guy, and to imagine that he's going to be hesitant and reserved and starstruck and a little bit in awe of his own moment, as we've seen many athletes go through and wilt and fold and not go out there and compete, is just a real part of the sport. To know that going in that Dominic believes in himself, that he's envisioned this moment, that he's worked hard towards this moment, that he's focused on this moment and has a level of confidence that he can win and even an idea how. It's a loose idea. He hasn't been totally specific about whether he was going to trade shots or grab a hold and push and pull. He hasn't been totally clear. He's used broader stroke terms, saying he's a better athlete, saying he's an all-around better fighter, looking at some of John's former opponents and go, well, that guy was a great striker and that guy was a good wrestler, but you haven't fought an all-around athlete. I am the next generation. I represent what you one time represented. In the same way as you came in and showed yesteryear about New Year, I'm now going to do that to you. For me, again, that's pretty G-rated. I don't see where Dom got out of line on that. And as a viewer, I kind of needed to know that. I do kind of need to know, hey, Dom, is this that one big cash grab? And these last 12 contests that went your way, is it all about just getting into this one night and this one moment, and then you ride off in the sunset and let somebody else have a term? Or are you here to win? And there's a difference. There's a big difference. And the fact that Dom is letting us know, no, I'm here to win. So it's not about any of those things. This is about competition. I'm a competitor. And I came to compete. Okay, I need to know that. So I think that Dom did it right. John has done nothing wrong. John Jones has the right to be mad. He even needs to be mad. It looks to me like everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. Justin Gaethje's in a little bit of a tough spot. And it's a tough spot while being a pretty good spot. Look, here's the short list to fight Conor, and that's going to be a mega fight. That might be the only mega fight out there where a world title is not on the line. I believe it is down to Nate Diaz and Justin Gaethje. Personal belief, little bit of inside information there. That's what I believe, though. Now, the issue that you have, if they do the fight at 170, that would be with Nate Diaz. If they do the fight with Gaethje, they could do it at 55 or 70. They can work those details out, though. Where it gets a little bit tricky for Justin is nothing is going to be done to sacrifice Conor versus Khabib, and I think that that has been made very clear for us, all the way down to a possibility that Conor does absolutely nothing until Khabib becomes available again, which will at the earliest be September. But that is even being discussed, and I offer that because that helps to prove my initial point, that nothing within reason is going to be done to sacrifice that match. Nate Diaz works because it doesn't sacrifice that match because it's 170 pounds. Okay. But what would it say for Gaethje if he were given that fight? This is the part where it starts to not look so good. It would say, we don't think you can beat him. In fact, we're sure that you can't beat him. As a matter of fact, we're looking for somebody actively who's not going to beat him, and that's why we called you. Tough spot. And it would all be true. It would be 100% accurate that that's why he was picked. Now, let's make a case for Gaethje. First off, he's super fun to watch. And second off, all he wants is a title fight. He said that he want to, I'm out. I don't care if I never fight again. I am out unless I get a title fight. I will wait. I will train. I'll be ready to go on April 18th, just in case Khabib or Tony isn't. Okay. You won me over. You've convinced me that you deserve to be in the batter's box to fill in that for that spot. Now, in many ways, though, Conor also fits that bill. And even though Conor is not a title fight, Conor mania is very real. To fight Conor, in many ways, somebody would want even more than a title fight. And I understand, yeah, that's an attention grab. And that's going to get a lot of spotlight. And that's going to come with a nice little coin purse with it. I get all of those things. But in fairness, why would anybody be wrong to want those things? Why would Justin be wrong to want all those things? I just need a little bit more to the story. I need a little, did Conor do something to Justin somewhere that I missed? Were they at a press conference together? Were they backstage together? Has Conor ever done anything to Justin on a personal level to warrant said grudge match? No title on the line. Guy's willing to even change weight classes and he's going to take it on the chin that the entire world who gave me and elevated to me this spot, did it because they're very sure that I am not going to disrupt plans. That's a tough spot to be in. You can work around, you can navigate that. You just have to know what you got to know the puzzle that you're staring at, and then we can figure out how to solve it. So it's a little bit of a catch-22. And I do think Justin is on the short list, and I would like to see Justin versus Conor. And I think doing that fight at 155 just to show an appropriateness to the division before Conor officially slides in as the number one contender, fine. That's pretty cool. But to do that fight and do it at 170, let Conor pull the strings and say, all right, you want the match, come on, but you got to come to me, and I like to fight at welterweight. Cool too. I can go down that road real easy as well. But there is something here that Justin needs to navigate. And the navigation is the clarity that nobody wants anything to disrupt the rematch of the biggest fight in the history of the sport, which is Khabib and Conor. So if he gets brought into it, he'll have his chance. He'll get his say. The unified rules will be observed. It's a two-man sport. But there's still an insult to whoever gets put in that spot. So there was some talk earlier this week. The Saudis will pay $100 million for Khabib versus Conor Part 2 if it takes place on their soil. Khabib has now responded to this. Khabib's response is, what do I need that kind of money for? Those numbers seem a little irrational. Okay, let me stop what I'm doing. Let me digest this. So Khabib is now saying that's too much money. I need less money because less money makes more sense for us to go out and compete. I'm in 100%, and quite frankly, Khabib is completely right. Yes, $100 million was not going to happen. It was not going to be generated. It didn't make any level of sense. But to hold out for those kinds of positions is kind of the story of MMA right now. For the champion to come out and reject that money, it's interesting in many ways, only because Khabib does not let us into Khabib's life very much. But when he does, it becomes very clear that Khabib is a man of principle. He's got his beliefs and his principles and his code, and that's how he's going to live. Now, you can agree with that or not agree with that. That's conversation for a different day. When you have a hero who has a code, it is incumbent upon that hero to follow his own code. You cannot be a hero, whether you're doing it to be a superstar or a supervillain. You must identify your code, and then you must prove your integrity to your own code. So when you juxtapose Conor McGregor, who wants to be a billionaire, who shows his wealth and flaunts his wealth in any possible way that he can, versus somebody of absolute different value, you can decide who's right. You can decide who you want to be. But this story has taken one of the most interesting turns in this story's history by now having the champion who's in the power position rejecting the money that is sought after by the challenger. When have you ever seen that in real life? When has the richest guy in the room not also been the powerfulest guy in the room? Fair question, and I'm asking you. Have you ever actually seen that? In this situation, the poor guy holds the power and doesn't want to become richer than the other guy. It's very fascinating. It's a story that's never been told. This has simply never happened. It caught me off guard to the highest of levels. But I also appreciated it because there is something that we want to tune in and see. My son is 4 years old, by example. I got to watch a lot of cartoons now. But the cartoons are always very easy to understand. It's black versus white. It's good versus evil. Very clear in the opening chapter, you realize who you're supposed to cheer for and who you're supposed to root against. And it's a big struggle until 30 seconds before they fade to black and roll the credits. And then the bad guy ends up getting beat. Rinse and repeat, cartoon after cartoon. Okay, fine. There's a reason they can keep making a cartoon with such a clear storyline. But as we become adults, we're not all that much different. We're really not all that much different in terms of what we grasp and gravitate to for a storyline. And a big fight is nothing more than a story. All promotion is storytelling. If you tell a really good story, you have a really big fight. If you tell an okay story, you have an okay fight. And that's the way it works. So as I start to look at Conor versus Khabib and the fact that Khabib, who's in the driver's seat, was just offered too much money and he turned it down, guys, there's no way to not love that guy. There's just no way to not see his values, see his principles, whatever they are and wherever they come from. But then also start to respect him as a competitor, because ultimately, what do we want as fans? We want guys competing who want to compete for the thrill of victory. All the rest of it as fans, man, don't even tell us about that. Don't tell me what a guy's making or the negotiations or who his sponsors are. Stop with all that. We get that's part of the business. We get that that seeps through. But at our core, it's very important for us to know, how much does this victory mean to you? What have you done sacrifice-wise, and what are you willing to do sacrifice-wise to simply get your hand raised opposite your opponent? At the core, we have to know that. It's very difficult to accentuate those things verbally. Very difficult. Everybody tries to do it, but it's very hard. But now Khabib, by rejecting a number, which, by the way, wasn't going to happen anyway. I mean, not for nothing. It wasn't going to happen anyway. But he still rejected the idea of the manufactured number. He wants something more reasonable. you can't beat that. You can't beat that storyline-wise. You can't beat that to be drawn to a guy. You also cannot deny that now what's left? Well, what's left is a personal grudge. What's left is respect. What's left is the unified rules. What's left is competition. And what's on the line? World championship. So Colby Covington has been making some noise. And basically, here's what happened. Colby Covington, in his fight with Kamaru Usman, okay, back up to the fight. Somewhere in that fight, and I believe it was after the second round. So now they're on their break with their corners prior to the third round. I believe that's when it was. If I'm wrong, three rounds have been completed. And this is just before the fourth. But Colby, it comes up somewhere that Colby's jaw is broken. I can't remember how that happened. If Colby told his corner, my jaw is broken, or if the corner looked at Colby and goes, hey, I think your jaw is broken. Either way, the audio was picked up. The corner was mic'd up. The cameras are right there. It makes its way to the broadcast team. The broadcast team shares this with the world. The reason I can't quite remember the order of events, I can't remember who told me. I watched this thing, but I watched it with an earpiece. I can't remember if I heard Colby say it, if I heard the corner say it, or if I heard it once Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier started saying it. But the bottom line is, that's private. That's medical. That was between Colby and his corner. It was not meant for the world to hear, and the world heard it. Colby has now come out and called that illegal, and he says that basically what I just said, that that was private, that that never should have been out there. Now, I don't know that I have an opinion on this, and I don't even know that I'm on Colby's side of this, but I am open to the conversation. If Colby had something medical and personal that he shared with his team, it would seem in any other walk of life that that is now private, personal, and medical between you and somebody you trusted. I don't know that the camera, from a technical standpoint, didn't have the right to capture that audio considering somebody mic'd up the corner, man. That's how it works. They come into your locker rooms to share this with you guys. Little inside baseball here, but they come in your locker room. They'll say, who's your head corner man? Whoever the head corner man is, they put a microphone on. It's just the way it works. I only share that with you because this wasn't like a secret microphone captured this and got a secret message out there. It was very well disclosed ahead of time and throughout time that this is how we do this. And we do this to capture corner audio because it offers something dramatic. And after all, we're making a television show here. Okay. Just wanted to explain for you guys how the mic was there and how the audio was captured, because I do think it's relevant. If you were to tie this in to another sport, take baseball right now, that's going around people stealing a pitcher's signals and calling that illegal. Or football, where if you get another coach's play sheet, totally illegal. I don't know that I have ever really understood that. I've also never come from a sport where anything was a secret. So there's a reason why I couldn't relate to that. In wrestling, by example, which I came from, your coach stands here, your opponent coach stands here, and then they yell. I can hear what my opponent's coach is saying. My opponent can hear what my coach is saying. I mean, it's a whole bunch of information, and who processes it and who listens to it and who reacts because of it is kind of up to you. I've never understood. I've always thought of myself, okay, if I'm in baseball and they're doing signals and it's relevant to my player to tell him what kind of a pitch is coming. It's a curveball. It's a straight ball right down the middle. It's a fastball. It's a soft pitch. I would tell him. I did not know that that was against the rules. And I did not know that there was such elaborate schemes set up to try to figure that out, to get information to the opposing team. And that that would be called cheating. For me, that just seems to make a level of sense. You would go and study your team. I was recently told by somebody that in football, you cannot scout through video. You cannot go to somebody's game and record it, or to their practice and record it, and then take that back and study it and try to learn their plays. That was shocking to me. Some of you are going to go, Chad, how did you not know that? I just didn't know that. I didn't play those things. I didn't know that. That would seem to me as a good level of sense. But I also would have never thought that revealing what came up between a fighter and his corner man mid-contest would be called illegal. But the number one contender for the welterweight championship, Colby Covington, has now brought this conversation up. I think we should have the conversation. I don't know which way I'm blowing on it. I just caught me off guard. It really did catch me off guard. But Colby, in many ways, if he does have something private, particularly if it has to do with medical, if something is broken, that is medical. That is his business. Moving forward, I would love to hear what you guys think. Oh, by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you. So Colby came out and said, it was revealed that I have a broken jaw, but I actually didn't. My jaw was not broken. I also would like to go and do a celebrity boxing match. I'm calling out 50 Cent. The reason I'm going after 50 Cent is 50 Cent said things about me on social media. He's been butting himself into the fight game for years, pretending to be a badass. Now I'm calling him out. By the way, just in case he tries to make this about money, I'll put up $1 million. And by the way, just in case he tries to make this about MMA, we're going to do it under the Queensberry's rules. Oh, and by the way, just in case he says I'm too high of a level of athlete, I will tie one arm behind my back. Now, something you guys have to know about Colby, and I trust that you do at this point in his career, if Colby says he'll put up the money, he'll do it under the Queensberry rules, and he'll tie a hand behind his back, you know what that means? That means he'll put up the money, he'll tie his hand behind his back, and he'll do it under the Queensberry rules. 50 Cent's in a little bit of a situation right now. A simple apology would get him out of it. To ignore it? Ew. Playground rules? 50's been called out. 50 needs to fight or 50 needs to respond. Listen up. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's and your renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Go to Geico.com, get a quote, see how much you can save. That's Geico.com, Geico.com.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Look in the mirror. You look good. You're doing everything right, and you're living healthy. But if you're not planning for the what-ifs of tomorrow, then it's time that you do. The problem is, historically, and rather ironically, the health conscious have overpaid and subsidized those with less healthy lifestyles. It's not a conspiracy, it's just how life insurance works. Guys, let me introduce you to Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates for people like you on their life insurance. If you're a runner or a cyclist, if you're into CrossFit, or any type of athlete, then you have committed yourself to a better lifestyle, which gives a good opportunity for you to live longer. Health IQ can save you up to 41% because physically active people have significantly lower risk for heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. And Health IQ is not just a lead generator. They take the customer through the entire process of applying, and the policy is underwritten by one of our top insurance partners. But these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. You won't find them anywhere else, and you must qualify to get a special rate. Go and see if you qualify by simply going to healthiq.com/chael. Take the quiz. See how you do. There's going to be other related qualifying factors, but you could save up to 41% on life insurance premium compared to other providers. Again, that's healthiq.com/chael to let them know we sent you and start the process for the Health IQ quiz. There's no commitment, and you'll even learn more potential opportunities that you could be rewarded for just for having a healthy living. One more time, that's healthiq.com/chael.
Now, back to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Let's do some fan questions.
Salam, what are your thoughts on Chael Sonnen, man?
Man, I'm kind of mad at Chael Sonnen because he hasn't been answering our questions recently. But anyways, Chael, we still have a question for you, and we are always be your favorite Pakistani medical students.
Isn't that right?
Now, the question is, what is Stephen A. Smith doing commentating on MMA? Don't you think Max Kellerman's better for that job?
Come on, guys. Peace out.
Oh, what's happening, fellas? You know what? You were wrong. I have not been avoiding your questions. They must just have not come through yet. But I will tell you this, Stephen A. has been doing a great job covering MMA, and he's doing a great job at expanding his repertoire as well. And, you know, if Stephen A. is to get involved with your sport, the only thing that does is help your sport.
Verdum is coming back in a couple of months. I was wondering what you think of him being matched up against the boa constrictor, Alexei Oleinik. Possible date for this matchup could be the UFC 250 card that's going to be in Sao Paulo, but I was thinking I'd rather see them go at it for 5 rounds to see what happens then, so perhaps main eventing a fight night would be better. What are your thoughts?
I like that match. You know, Werdum called him out. Werdum called Olenek out after Olenek's last victory, and Werdum said, my jiu-jitsu is better. Okay. I really think that's a pretty good matchup. And, you know, as Werdum starts to get back in there, Verdum's in one of these tough spots where he's so good and he's so dangerous. You can't give him a low guy. He's not going to walk in and get a number 15 guy. He's always going to be in there with top 10 guys. It's the only responsible way to, you got to put a good fighter in there with Werdum or you're going to get him hurt. But Verdum's in this other situation where he's been out for a little bit. And to try to come back and shake some of that, you know, what you call it, ring rust or whatever you want to, but you got to learn a little bit. You got to get a little bit of experience. You got to get a couple of minutes in there. And it does seem like Olenek, if for nothing else, would come in and probably be a little bit grappling heavy. And I think that could be helpful. I think that could be very wise for Werdum to have somebody that wants to grab a hold of him instead of stand in front of him more in your first time back. I think that match makes sense. I think it's a hard call out for Werdum just because there is something to be said for momentum. And Olenek definitely has momentum. But to your question, I'm into the match.
Hey, Chael, Ahmed from Michigan. Do you think if Tony Ferguson is victorious in his bout with Khabib Nurmagomedov, that his first title defense would be Conor and not an immediate rematch with Khabib due to the fact that how big of a draw Conor is?
What a mess that would be. And I love to think that through the same way as you're saying, but that would really change the landscape in a hurry. I mean, all your pieces come off the board if that happens. And Tony has a very good shot of beating Khabib. That's not only according to Tony, that's according to Khabib. I mean, this is a hard fight. So let's work that through real fast. See, I like the idea of having a round robin. I like the idea of having Tony, Khabib, Conor, and maybe they trade it all back and forth and sideways, right? Maybe Tony comes in and gets a jump on Khabib. Conor comes in and gets over on Tony. Khabib goes back to Conor. You understand the pieces there, but it would certainly change things fast. If the goal is to get Conor and Khabib together and have them get together for the title, you're going to have a big problem. If Tony goes in and grabs the belt, what do you do then? And I don't think anybody's going to complain if all of a sudden, okay, it's not going to be Khabib and Conor. It's going to be Tony versus Conor. Amazing. Sounds fun, but now it sounds different. It's not the same thing. And are we going to put this in Saudi Arabia? Are we going to hold this fight in Moscow? Well, all of a sudden, you don't have to worry about those things anymore, right? Tony's from California. Tony's got the title. Looks like we're not going to Moscow. So I think that it'd be very interesting what would happen there, but it would also be hard to predict. It is. I mean, you got to see, is it going to be a controversial match? Is it going to be a close match? Is it going to call for an immediate rematch? We just saw this with Stipe and Daniel Cormier. We just saw this. The biggest fight that anybody could make would have been John Jones versus Daniel Cormier. That was the one. It was being discussed. What weight class are we going to do it? Is John moving up to heavyweight? I mean, this thing was all but done. That will never happen and is never even discussed again. As soon as Stipe beat DC, particularly in the dramatic fashion, losing the first round, coming back, all those body shots in the fourth, and it was this very dramatic match where, okay, that fight told a story. And we don't have a story yet for a rematch for Tony and Khabib, because we don't have the match yet. But I say, if that fight goes out and it tells a story that's dramatic and all of a sudden we start to see these pieces, yes, you could very possibly just go in and look to do a rematch.
Hey, what's up, Chael? This is Amin from Montreal. I just got ticket for Tony versus Khabib fight. I'm super, super excited. And my question is, we've never seen Khabib getting cut during a fight. And we know that Tony Ferguson likes to use a lot of elbows. So my question is, how do you think will Khabib react if he gets cut during this fight? And how do you think it will affect him? Thank you.
A lot has been made of that. I got to tell you, a lot has been made of the fact that Tony Ferguson likes to cut and slice people and how good he is with those elbows. That even if Khabib takes him down and gets that top control, like we've seen Khabib do in so many fights, that's where Tony then goes to work with the elbows, which I think all of this is true. I just don't know that I would buy in to any level of narrative that was to make believe that Khabib all of a sudden goes into panic mode. Khabib sees his own blood and all of a sudden goes into panic mode. And that seems to be a lot of what I'm hearing. And I don't know if that's how you were asking the question. Maybe that's just how I'm interpreting your question. But I think that that would be very naive of us. If we have no evidence whatsoever that a cut is going to bother Khabib, but therefore we've decided to add into the story, should Khabib get cut, it's going to bother him and he's going to unfold. I don't know about all that. I don't know if I'm buying that. However, the strikes that would have to land to cut Khabib, which are going to be Tony's elbows, those in of himself could end up be the problem, not the blood. I mean, those are a big deal, the way Tony does it. And some guys just have elbows like that. They're just very sharp. Anderson Silva had that. Very sharp, right? He was long and he was skinny, so everything was very pointed. Tony's one of those guys where it's a real weapon. A little bit different the way he does it. And it's going to cause you some pain, some swelling, some numbing. Yes, it could also cause some blood. But I think that the pain and numbing and swelling would have more of an effect on Khabib's mindset and the rest of the bout than the blood.
Hey, Chael. This is John from New Jersey with my little daughter Audrey here. Say, what's up, Audrey? Anyway, my question is about DC and Stipe. Stipe's coach was recently on the interview, and he said that he would want to fight someone that isn't DC. He wants new blood, maybe possibly a rematch with Ngannou. Do you think it would be wrong for Stipe and his camp to deny DC the rematch that he gave to him a year ago? Do you think it would be wrong? How do you feel about Stipe fighting somebody else that's not DC and, you know, making DC wait around and get older for that trilogy fight? Tell me how you feel about it, man. I think it'll be kind of wrong with Stipe to do that. Anyway, I love the show. Say bye, Audrey.
Bye. Bye, Uncle Chael.
I can tell you with a very high degree of confidence that Stipe's next fight is going to be with Daniel Cormier for the heavyweight championship. I can also tell you that if we look at the history of these two, don't forget, the night Daniel comes in and stops Stipe, takes his championship, they usher Stipe to the back and they bring Brock Lesnar in and tried to make that fight. Now, nobody was wrong there. And Daniel Cormier was not wrong for wanting this big mega match with Brock at all. But this, he still did it. I mean, Daniel did still go down that road and keep Stipe at an arm's reach. And Stipe was working so hard trying to get that rematch. I mean, everything short of begging. He was out there pleading his case. He got it. Turned out Stipe was right. What I'm sharing that for is now Stipe's doing that back to him. I think that this is fair play. Yeah, I think that Stipe goes in there and fights Daniel next. And I also think Stipe's going to make Daniel sweat and worry and wonder about what he's going to do. It seems like he's just returning the favor.
Hey, Uncle Chael. I want to ask you a question about the great Cale Sanderson. I watch a lot of videos on that guy, and I was wondering what your thought would be on him in MMA. The guy was dominant for us in wrestling, and I still think he's the best amateur wrestler, or whatever you want to call him, that ever did it. So, if I could just hear about that, and if you have an amazing Cale Sanderson story, love to hear it. Thanks.
Oh, I think we'd all have to assume that Cale would have cleaned house. He would have come in and just done a great job. You know, above everything else, he's a great competitor. It could be collegiate or freestyle, in any way you want to do it, but you bring in another guy, you shake hands, you set up a time constraint, you set up some rules. He knows how to win. He knows how to get his hand raised. So, yeah, I think that would have translated to MMA, and a lot of people thought he was going to do that. I know he spent some time in MMA rooms. He'd go in, he'd help with their grappling class, or he'd be in town, you know, recruiting somewhere, and somebody would ask him to come in. And so he spent some time. I don't know that he ever sparred. I've never heard a story like that. Like, oh, you know, Cale came in and sparred today. I've never heard that. But I would have to think that you're right. I mean, this was just one dominant, big, strong, aggressive, understood, new controls, new positioning, tough. Everything that you would think would be a helpful component to MMA, yeah. Sanderson checks all those boxes.
Hey, Chael, one of your Armenian fans here, Ryan from Connecticut. Just curious as to what your thoughts are on the upcoming Edmund Shahbazyan fight versus Derek Brunson. Your thoughts and predictions on that fight, and also about Edmund Shahbazyan's future, possibly becoming the youngest UFC champion. Is he on the right track? And what your dislikes and likes are about his fighting so far. Thank you. Go Armenia.
Oh, Edmund is nasty. I love watching him fight. I love where his skills are at. One thing that he did in his last fight, and it turned my head a lot, was not only did he know where his opponent was, but he also knew his pacing. And to see that, particularly in such a young man, is surprising in many ways. But he knew when to put his foot down on the pedal. He knew when to catch his breaths in there. I like the story that he could go on to be the youngest champion ever. I think that there's something that's very marketable about that. Not to mention he's undefeated, and not to mention he's a lot of fun to watch. Now, Derek Brunson is a step up in competition. Derek Brunson is nobody's fool, and on just the right night, Derek Brunson is going to get the jump on anybody out there. So Edmund is going to be tested here. He's going to have to burn some calories. It's a match that division needs to happen. It's a forming division in many ways right now. There's a lot of pieces that are moving around 185. We just had two champions in Rockhold and Weidman leave the division. Had a perennial top contender in Jacare leave the division, but now I think he's headed back down. I'm just saying, it's a little bit of a weird division. And Edmund matters. And the outcome of this match is going to be relevant.
What's up, Uncle Chael? It's your boy, Baby. And I wanted to ask you two questions. Question number one, what did you eat for breakfast this morning? Question number two, what is the best discipline to transition into MMA? Would it be a boxer, a wrestler, a Taekwondo guy? I don't know. What do you think?
I did not have breakfast today. You know, I don't really eat breakfast. Almost never. Almost never, ever. First off, I don't really like it. I don't like breakfast foods that much. Not that into eggs. I don't dislike them, but I'm not super into them. And I usually don't eat till my first meal till about 3 in the afternoon. So I will tell you this. Got a Super Bowl party to go to. My wife had 10 pounds of wings. I heard her order some pizzas. I know there was something about sushi getting delivered, so I'm definitely going to get my calories in, but it wasn't in breakfast. And as far as the best style to transition, I would encourage something grappling-based. And I would only encourage that because if somebody's looking to start and haven't done an art before, grappling would be less traumatic than if you wanted to walk in your first day, throw some headgear on, jump in a ring, and you start, you know, boxing or kickboxing or something along these lines. Grappling's a little more push and pull. You can get your heart rate up, but you can also start to learn what you're doing. Start to learn pacing and positions, and you can do it without taking the shots.
Hey, Chael, this is Pete. I'm a fan of yours, and I'm from Berlin. And I have a question regarding the Tony Ferguson versus Habib fight. Since this has been the fifth time this fight has been announced, I don't think we're going to get a sixth try. However, what do you think would happen if the champ, Habib, pulls out? Because since he's the champ and Ramadan is right around the corner, if I'm not mistaken, in April, I'd assume the UFC would have to strip him. What do you think?
Oh, that'd be a mess, wouldn't it? That would be a very big mess, and I suppose some of it would come down to what was the reason. You know, what was the reason? What happened? Was this an injury? Was this an illness? Exactly what happened? And when do you think that he's going to return? Yeah, I suppose if that happened closer to the fight week, all of a sudden he pulls out for some reason. I don't know that they would strip him, but it would seem as though perhaps that would be an extra motivating factor to keep Tony on the card, bring in whoever that opponent's going to be. Gaethje, I think, has offered to do this. Connor has spoke about doing this. And do an interim match. Could be something like that. Then Connor might say, I'll do it, but no interim. Strip him completely. I mean, who knows? That would be a really big mess. And let's hope that doesn't happen.
Hey, what's up, Chael? This is Eli Knight from Missouri. I was wondering, what do you think would happen if Yoel Romero went up to 205? Because I know he makes a huge cut down to 185. Do you think he could be as successful at 205? Or do you think 185 is his perfect weight class? Let me know.
Well, Yoel's been competing at 185 his whole career. When he was an amateur wrestler, for example, when he represented Cuba at the World Championships and the Olympic Games, he did it at 185 pounds. So, one of those guys. And I've always wanted to see him at 205. I always thought he was the right size, but he also had an explosiveness. He also matches up very interestingly with John Jones. Now, this story would be a little bit more relevant 5 and 6 years ago when Yoel started to kind of make his run through the sport, but at that time, I always thought, you know, that guy, Romero, should be doing this at light heavyweight, but he wants to be 185, and I don't know why he puts his body through that. I mean, he has a really hard time making it. It cost him a world championship. You know, if you'll remember that, he fought Rockhold. That was for the interim world championship. He won that fight, but because he missed weight by 0.2 pounds, the belt was no longer on the line. So it quite literally cost him a world championship. And I do agree with you. I have always wanted to see him at light heavyweight. All right, guys, that will do it for the day, but we'll be back on Friday. Until then, enjoy your weeks, and make sure you're back here with me, Chael Sonnen, and for that, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
If you're looking for political commentary as the 2020 presidential campaign heats up, be sure to check out The Charlie Kirk Show, known for energizing college students across the country and getting people involved with politics. Charlie will now be reporting all the news from the upcoming Iowa primary and beyond, and you can catch up on the latest amazing episodes, including interviews with Ben Shapiro, Vice President Mike Pence. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, podcastone.com, Apple Podcast, or wherever you're listening to this show.